Penguin Random House Audio presents Declassified, a low-key guide to the high-strung world of classical music. This is the author, Ariana Warsaw van Rauch. Note to listeners, this program comes with an awesome downloadable bonus PDF containing listening lists, lists of notable composers, a comically disturbing poem by Mozart in the original German, and other resources from the book. To my family, my parents, who gave me everything, who taught me most of what I know, and who still let me roast them in these pages. My sister, who's given and taught me just as much, and who always believes in me so loudly I have to listen. My husband, who can't sing to save his life, but who's nevertheless the most beautiful song in mine. My kids, who inspired this book and sometimes even let me write it. Introduction. There's a story my parents like to tell about how I became a violinist. It starts off with me, when I was 2½, losing my voice because I wouldn't stop singing the Queen of the Night's bombshell second aria in Mozart's The Magic Flute. Who could have guessed that the notoriously strenuous number, which vaults and arpeggiates and somersaults around and above the standard limits of the soprano range in a breathtaking display of power, technique, and virtuosity, would prove unhealthy for the vocal cords of a 2-year-old? My parents took me to the doctor, who diagnosed me with nodules. He also said, famously, "You've got to find a way to shut that kid up." So my parents brought me home, sat me down, and asked if I wanted to play the piano. They knew I loved music, and they had 2 pianos already, from my dad. But I said no. I wanted to play the violin. The rest of the story is just a sigh, which somehow manages to say she was always such a pain in the ass, while also encapsulating and claiming credit for the whole of my training and career. My 2 degrees from Juilliard, my competition wins and concert tours, my album, the time I mangled the concertmaster solo in John Adams's The Death of Klinghoffer while Adams himself was conducting. All of it, according to this sigh, was foretold the minute my parents trusted their collective gut and caved to the demands of their imperious toddler. All of it, that is, until I quit the violin and walked away from music just a few years into my professional career. No one saw that coming, except possibly Carol, my high school counselor. Anyway, it's a tidy little ball of yarn, isn't it? It has all the things you look for in a story. Adversity, kismet, stubborn toddlers, throat nodules. But it's also bullshit. First off, it makes some pretty questionable leaps. For instance, it takes great liberties with the definition of the word singing, and it hinges on the flawed premise that when I said I wanted to play the violin, I actually knew what I was talking about. Plus, the whole point of the story, the thing that lends its significance, is that this was when I decided to become a violinist. It wasn't, though. It was when I started taking lessons. But I took ballet lessons, too, and ski lessons, and tennis lessons, and golf lessons. And if you'd asked me at the age of 2 what I actually wanted to be when I grew up, I would have said the next Peekaboo Street on Tuesday, and the prima ballerina of American Ballet Theater on Wednesday, and James Bond all the other days of the week. So when did I pledge my heart, my soul, and all of my waking hours to classical music? I was 7, and it was because of a boy. But we'll get to that later. What is classical music anyway? When I was a kid, there was no classical music. There was just music. Bach, Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven. And it was everywhere in our house, at all times of the day and often at night because my mom never wanted our dogs to feel lonely. My dad was a concert pianist who eventually began teaching at Phillips Academy, a boarding school in Andover, Massachusetts. When he wasn't giving piano lessons, teaching music theory courses, practicing on his Steinway, or his Bechstein, or later coaching me and my sister, a cellist, through our practice sessions, he could be found in front of his old quad electrostatic speakers, buried in a score. My parents acquired a rescue dog toward the end of my high school career. Hogan was his name. He was quite literally starving when he came to us, and his fear of going hungry never left him. The way Hogan was about eating, the way he'd devour 3 bowls of chicken and oatmeal and dog food and then snatch a whole wheel of brie from the kitchen counter and then scavenge through the laundry bin and scarf up 9 socks, never any pairs, was the way my dad used to be about music. He still loves it, by the way. It's just that he plays a lot of golf these days, too. My mom, an English teacher, was our family's token non-musician. She did play the French horn in school, though, and she's always loved Bach and Brahms and the other Austro-German greats. For years, she also threatened to haunt the rest of us unless we agreed to perform Tchaikovsky's piano trio at her funeral. Now she just wants us to smuggle her ashes onto this one South Pacific military reserve so that we can scatter her at sunset into her favorite bit of ocean. She and my dad used to teach a course called Words and Music at Andover. Together, they would analyze operas and teach musical texts like Joyce's The Dead. They'd explicate compositions inspired by works of literature, like Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream and Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. They'd also embarrass their teenage daughters by likening musical climaxes to orgasms and insisting that John Dowland's Come Again was explicitly sexual both in text and in compositional form. They were right, though. It is. I was surrounded by this music from the very beginning, and some of you, I know, are already concluding that that's why I love it. You're thinking to yourselves that classical music is an acquired taste, like caviar. But you're wrong. First off, caviar is disgusting. I've been trying to force my palate to tolerate it for well over a decade because I've always seen myself in my mind's eye as the kind of suave, sophisticated person who eats the stuff. But there's no getting around the fact that it's revolting. It tastes like fishy snot blisters that explode onto your tongue when you bite into them. Classical music doesn't. Second, classical music isn't an actual genre. I'm still going to call it that sometimes in this book, but it's really just a collection of music from another time. Lots of times, as we'll cover in chapter 1. Yes, it's still old, but so what? Old things can be amazing. Do you like cake? Are you telling me that if a royal chef from the court of Versailles traveled through time to offer you one of his cakes, you turn your back on it because hostess also makes ho-hos? Why not just eat the Versailles cake and the ho-hos? That's what I'd do. And what I did, metaphorically speaking. Operas and symphonies may have been my family's bread and butter, but we listened to all kinds of music. Pop music for cleaning, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong for celebrating, and those bleak, muted, unforgivably depressing folk songs my mom used to force on us in order to contextualize human suffering, or possibly just give us a taste of it. And the only thing that separated these various sounds, at the beginning at least, was whether or not I liked them. Bach? Absolutely. Bon Jovi? Yes, please. Simon and Garfunkel? Hell no. The point is, when I lost my voice singing that Queen of the Night aria, I had no notion that the music I was listening to was niche music. And indeed, it wasn't. In the Western world, classical music was the only music that was written for 15 centuries, and during those centuries, it fulfilled every societal need from dirge to dance music to concert piece. The classical bit is a construct. Folk music was also a thing, but it came through the oral tradition, which some people like to distinguish from the written tradition by throwing around the term art music. I am not one of these people. This is important to understand, because what it means is that this music was composed for people, not aficionados. There was no secret or special education that was required back in Mozart's time in order to enjoy it. You are every bit as qualified as the people who were sitting front and center at the premiere of Beethoven's Fifth. But you've been told, by society's subtle and not so subtle cues, that classical music is stuffy and boring and intellectual, and not for you. Well, I'm here to tell you that nothing could be further from the truth. Do you remember the Little Bear books when Little Bear goes to Mother Bear and says, "I'm cold, I want something to put on." So Mother Bear makes him a hat and he's happy for 2 seconds. And then he comes back and says again, "I'm cold, I want something to put on." So Mother Bear makes him a coat and he's happy again. But then he comes back and says again, "I'm cold, I want something to put on." And so Mother Bear makes him some boots and so on and so forth until eventually Little Bear realizes that his own fur coat, the one he's had all along, is warmer than any hat or coat or boots he could wear, that he is, in fact, enough just as he is.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?